please rise for our opening hymn, In the Garden of Eden by I, Ron Butterfly.
Remember when we used to make out to this hymn?
Well, there's a picture of pop American Christianity through the lens of the long-running Simpsons program. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Tonight we talk about religion and pop culture. Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service is going to join us. How does this river run? Does it run both ways, not only from the church to the culture? That's what we're seeing in The Simpsons. We're seeing a take of pop culture on what American Christianity is all about. But how accurate is that picture? How much has pop American Christianity been influenced by pop American culture? We're going to talk about it tonight on Issues Etc. I'd like to hear from you this Sunday. It's March the 19th. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. We have an in-studio email address as well, issuesetc@kfuo.org. How do you think that pop culture treats religion? And how has pop culture influenced the Christian church? 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Terry Mattingly is a regular guest. He is author of the nationally syndicated On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service. And he's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He is author of the new book, Pop Goes Religion, Faith in Popular Culture. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be there.
Who is the Jesus of pop American culture?
Part of me is tempted to haul off, you know, and say Oprah. But I'd prefer, I mean, let's go ahead and get the obligatory C.S. Lewis reference, you know, out of the way. I mean, I think we're all required by law somewhere to make X number of quotes from C.S. Lewis per hour or something when doing popular apologetics. But do you remember Lewis made that statement in Mere Christianity about Jesus not giving us a choice between thinking that he was just a good, wise religious leader, you know, who had a lot of nice things to say, versus the claim that he was making exclusive truth claims that he was the Savior? Do you remember that?
I remember it.
Lewis says that at one point that if he made all the claims that the Bible says that he made, and he wasn't what he claimed to be, then he was insane. Someone more like, you know, a man who claimed he was a poached egg, I believe is the quote from Lewis.
Insane or evil.
Or evil, right. So I think you have to start off by saying that essentially the Jesus of pop culture is the first of those two options. He is a wise leader. An extraordinary number of people even are willing to say he's the Son of God or something. But when you push it to some sort of exclusive claim or biblical authority in particular related to particular issues, let alone the existence of one way to salvation, one claim for a path to salvation, that is where the popular culture breaks down. It's very important to realize that American popular culture, this is the big idea for everything you and I need to talk about, it's very important to realize that America's popular culture is not secular. It is intensely spiritual. It just doesn't happen to tolerate truth claims that it believes are intolerant.
I want to come back to that central point. I agree with you there, Terry. But first, your description of the Jesus of pop culture bears an uncanny resemblance to the Jesus of pop American Christianity in many ways. Your thoughts?
Well, actually, I think a lot of evangelicals want, I don't think that many mainstream evangelical leaders have adopted what could actually and accurately be called universalism, the belief that all paths to God are the same. I don't think many evangelical leaders have formally or officially or overtly adopted that. Now, what you can say is that there are a lot of churches today that are so busy talking about other things, and they may be gun-shy to make a public case for what they actually believe. At that point, you might say that a lot of them have become functionally universalist. And, of course, the pulpits and the altars of most mainline or old-line Protestant churches in America, the leaders of most of our liberal mainline churches are universalists.
What do you think is the biggest example of how pop culture, and you've made the point there, it is not secular by any stretch, but how pop culture's spirituality has influenced the church?
Well, first of all, the church seems to think that its goal today is to be entertaining. The second thing I would say is that the music in so many of our churches today, the goal is to be transient of the moment and fit in with the musical styles of the surrounding culture. So, and music is just tremendously important. And the third thing, I've been both fascinated and appalled by these studies that have said that 85 to 90% of the churches in America that are growing in membership have installed large screen video technology in the front of their sanctuaries.
What appalls you about that?
Once again, I don't think the primary purpose of worship is entertainment. And it seems to be validating the role that television and film plays in our lives, period.
How do you think Christians come across in pop culture?
It used to be that the minute someone was identified as a Christian, the next thing you could expect them to do would be turning out to be a serial killer or something, or wacko. That was the line that Michael Medved started using all the way back around 1990, 1991, 92, right in that era. I think it's more complex than that today. Do you remember the movie about, what is it now, 2 years ago? The movie called Saved? Very controversial film about a Christian high school.
Yeah.
Well, a friend of mine that watched that movie said it's very important to realize that that movie is pro-Christian. It is pro a certain type of Christian. And at the end of the movie, you are left with the conclusion that there are good Christians and there are bad Christians, and Hollywood gets to tell us who is who. But it was very important to realize that that movie was praising a particular approach to Christianity.
And with only about 30 seconds, what was that?
Liberal, non-judgmental, all-tolerant. Yet, Christian. Defending all of that within the context of Christian language.
When we come back from this break, we're going to continue our conversation with Terry Mattingly, author of the nationally syndicated On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and also author of the book Pop Goes Religion, Faith in Popular Culture. And we'd like you to join the conversation as well. 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Our email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're going to be giving away Terry Mattingly's book, Pop Goes Religion, to listeners with the best questions and comments this hour. 1-800-730-2727, issuesetc@kfuo.org. When we come back, we're going to turn our attention to music, to the music of pop culture. How does it carry? It's the burden of describing what may be just the remnants of a Christian culture? And what about music in pop American Christianity, now consciously connected, now consciously trending with the top 40? And we'll be talking about television, movies, print, and how Christianity should really be engaging pop culture. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
You'll find lots of wonderful illustrations in our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. It's titled, He is Risen Indeed. This picture book for children ages 4 and up depicts the drama of Passion Week in words from Scripture. He is Risen Indeed is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about this book on our website, issuesetc.org. He is Risen Indeed costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. David Erickson's paintings capture the events of Good Friday and Easter morning in He is Risen Indeed. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. He is Risen Indeed will help children learn about Jesus' suffering, death, and resurrection. Looking for an Easter gift for a young child, grandchild, or godchild? He is Risen Indeed, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you to pay the production salaries and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to prayerfully consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You can donate by credit card, 1-800-737-0172. Or you can donate by check, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is underwritten in part by Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. The faculty there of Concordia Theological Seminary is offering several continuing education programs for pastors and for lay people all across the country this summer. To find out more about these continuing education opportunities near you, check out our website, issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, their number, area code 260-452-2266, 260-452-2266. We're talking about religion and pop culture. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Terry, I've noticed something about music in, this is kind of the nexus between pop culture and pop American Christianity. Music in pop American Christianity, especially the Sunday morning music, is now consciously connected to the ebb and flow of the Christian top 40, what's being played on contemporary Christian radio stations. Have you noticed it?
Well, yeah, there's a piece of the chapter on popular music in my book deals with the fact that it isn't just consciously connected, it's financially and legally connected.
How do you mean?
Which is that the companies that publish Christian music today, the largest Christian music companies, are now owned and are part of conglomerates by larger secular companies, and thus the stock is traded in the same framework, which means you've got to pretty much push forward on the same type of profit margin. Or the rest of the corporation isn't going to think very highly of you. To do that, you have to turn music over. Obviously, you've got to sell new stuff, right? So longevity and a continuance, even from month to month or year to year, forget generation to generation. Any kind of continuance is bad for business because you've got to sell again. I remember when I recently moved back up to the Washington area, but before that I taught at Palm Beach Atlantic University down in Palm Beach County, Florida. And one of my students was in the worship team of one of the largest non-denominational charismatic churches in the area. And she described something that had happened during a rehearsal a couple of weeks earlier. This came up during a class that I taught called Exegete Culture. And this young woman said that they were in a rehearsal and they were practicing one of the songs that was kind of like the church's greatest hits. It was a song that the congregation really loved and always belted out whenever it came time to sing it. And while they were rehearsing it, she said a woman who stood at the microphone next to her in the worship team leaned over and said, "I am so over this song." And this girl said she thought that captured, you know, the emotional side of, you know, of what we're talking about.
I
am so over this song.
You write several times in your book, Pop Goes Religion, about U2 and Bono, the lead singer of U2.
Right.
And I think you either say he's a rock musician who happens to be a Christian or a Christian who happens to be a rock musician. I can't remember which one is it. What's your point there?
Well, I mean, there's a chapter in the book where I get into a discussion of all these competing definitions of Christian music. You know, Christian music is hymns. Christian music is music that makes an evangelistic point. Christian, you know, da 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 da. And the final definition that I cite is a definition that I got from Bono, all the way back in the early '80s, at the time of the band's controversial and very Christian second album, the album called October. And Bono, in a discussion I had with him at that time, said that he didn't believe that Christian music exists. Now, what he meant by that was, of course, he realized there's an entire Christian music industry. But what Bono meant is he said that he did not consider himself a Christian musician. He said, "I am a musician who is struggling to be a Christian and to live a Christian life, and I personally think that it is wrong." He said, "I am too sinful and fallen to be able to call my music Christian. It would be wrong for me to use the word Christian as a marketing device in light of how sinful I am."
Which is precisely what the, now we can call it, industry is doing, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, there's an entire syndrome of the word Christian being used as an adjective to describe just about everything. A decade or so ago, I went to the Christian Booksellers Association meetings. They happened to be meeting in Denver at the time, and of course the national headquarters is in Colorado Springs. And the big hot fad for that CBA convention was Christian cappuccino. And, you know, I never found out exactly what the doctrinal content of the cappuccino was, but it did seem to me that basically that since Barnes & Noble and Borders and everybody else was starting cappuccino bars in their bookstores, that once again you had a situation where a Christian adjective, Christian industry, was taking its marching orders from the secular world and photocopying, you know, its own version of something.
Let's talk about movies and television. I mean, that's a huge subject here, but starting with the small screen, if we could, what do you make of the religion of VeggieTales?
What was that?
What do you make of the religion being portrayed in the popular kids' videos, the VeggieTales?
Oh, the VeggieTales.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I misheard you.
That's all right.
Well, I mean, VeggieTales is pretty straightforward evangelicalism. Of course, to some degree, they're having to avoid a lot of Christian language and leaning more on Old Testament and other stories because they don't want to offend the marketplace too much. But you know, frankly, I like a lot of the VeggieTales stuff. I'm particularly a Silly Songs fan. But you can watch them struggle. They tend to take their New Testament principles and put them into separate stories that they write themselves, as opposed to doing veggie versions of biblical stories, for a very simple reason. Phil Vischer, the original guiding light of the company, Phil Vischer once told me that he had a sign above his computer terminal that said, "I will not portray Jesus Christ as a vegetable."
That's a good rule of thumb.
Yeah, it's in that kind of one of those first do no harm kind of situations. But if you eliminate portraying Jesus, and you're probably going to avoid doing that with the disciples as well, it's kind of hard to do things from the New Testament. So as a result, they've ended up doing most of their explicitly biblical stories from the Old Testament. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Folks, you can read Terry Mattingly's On Religion column and a blog that he contributes to called Get Religion. Just go to the What's New section of our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Your phone calls and your emails after this break, 1-800-730-2727. In-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Also, as time goes by, you might want to ask Terry about some of these things. We had The Simpsons in there. What about the Lord of the Rings trilogy, or The Passion, or The Matrix? All of these things intensely spiritual in different ways. 1-800-730-2727. This break is a great time to call. 1-800-730-2727. issuesetc@kfuo.org is our in-studio email address. We're going to give away Terry Mattingly's new book called Pop Goes Religion tonight to listeners with the best questions and comments on religion and pop culture. 1-800-730-2727 or issuesetc@kfuo.org. When we come back, I do want to talk with Terry about The Passion and then pop culture in print. That's Terry's particular forte. I imagine he has something to say about religion and pop culture when it comes to pen and ink. Stay tuned. Pastor Mark Schaefer, coordinator of continuing education and related events at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the importance of equipping the priesthood of all believers.
It's so important that, the church, we have faithful pastors, but we also have faithful laypersons. The church can't exist without people. And the more that our laypeople understand their role and how they fit in the church, it's good for the church's mission. It's good for the church's service. It's good for the worship life of the church, too.
For more information about the spring retreats at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, including one led by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. John Seleska, visit their website, ctsfw.edu, or call area code 260-452-2204, 260-452-2204.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Todd Wilkin here again, talking with Pastor Matt Harrison, Executive Director of LCMS World Relief, about the world's AIDS crisis. Matt, talk about how the AIDS crisis especially affects children.
Nearly 20% of AIDS deaths are children. Children who, through absolutely no ethical or moral fault of their own, have this curse upon them. And these are children where it's very easy to look upon them in pictures and say, well, they are those children. But then you meet them, each one of them, and you hear each one's name, and you talk to them about where they go to church and what they dream about and what they would like to have in their little lives, something as simple as a chair, let alone a toy or a bed or somebody who loves them, and you can't but respond.
How is LCMS World Relief and the many who support it, how are they responding to this crisis?
traditionally, we've done most of the response by way of education. That is, we've provided resources to our partners, many in Africa, but also AIDS in Thailand becomes a real challenge, is becoming an extreme challenge, and also in Russia, providing dollars so that pastors, church workers, health workers can be trained on AIDS. So education is very important, and we believe education is really key within a strong Lutheran context of law and gospel, and one that has a proper understanding of sexuality as God's gift, and the blessings that God gives us there, and the blessings of faithfulness and monogamy. So that has been important. We have, in the last several years, been very active with several orphanages in Kenya, and that has been just a wonderful joy. We just finished building a brand new orphanage that houses about 60 children. It's amazing. For about $30,000, we were able to build a complete orphanage. We just added to the Matango Orphanage in western Kenya an entire medical clinic for really very little money comparatively. And we're increasingly going in this direction, providing resources for congregations in Africa so they can deal with their own HIV/AIDS orphans.
LCMS World Relief offers Christ-centered, cross-focused help to victims of the world's AIDS crisis. For more information about LCMS World Relief, find them at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call them toll-free 1-888-930-4438. LCMS World Relief, concerned for both body and soul.
ZZ Top from their Trace Umbres album, Jesus Done Left Chicago. We're talking about religion and pop culture. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Next week on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss answering the objections of atheists, agnostics, and skeptics. Ron Rhodes of Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries will be our guest. How would you respond to these statements? There's no such thing as absolute truth. Or the book of Genesis is a myth, it's not an historical account. Or how about this one? If God created everything, where did he come from? We'll talk about it next week with Ron Rhodes. Now, if you'd like to know what we'll be discussing for the weeks ahead on the program, visit our website, issuesetc.org. And while you're there at the website, be sure to check out our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. He is Risen Indeed. It's a beautifully illustrated children's picture book, and it basically tells the story of Holy Week, Christ's death and resurrection. He is risen indeed. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. He is risen indeed, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. Terry, I wanted to ask you about one film in particular that you've written quite a bit about as lately, and that is the Passion of the Christ, Mel Gibson's big film of several years ago. How did you evaluate it?
Well, first of all, I've got to ask you a question.
Yeah.
How long has it been since you played ZZ Top on Issues, etc.?
Well, that's probably a first, although we've done Doobie Brothers. We pretty much hit all the big ones. I was looking tonight, by the way, when I was doing some pre-production, Terry, for the one Van Halen piece that you quote in your book, because I'm a Van Halen fan, and even though I'm from Texas, not a ZZ Top fan, but it's been a long time, Terry.
Well, yeah, you're going to have to let me explain the story of why my book opens with that quote.
No, please do.
From ZZ Top.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, in the foreword of the book, there is what I hope is a funny story, but it also kind of sets the tone of the book. while I was the religion writer in Denver, I was waiting one day at a hotel outside the elevators, preparing, kind of stalking the newly appointed Roman Catholic Archbishop of Denver. Now, it helps to understand that before I became a religion columnist, I actually was a rock columnist in central Illinois during my graduate school days and before graduate school at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. And long, long, long before that, in high school, when I was a Southern Baptist preacher's kid growing up on the Texas Gulf Coast, several friends of mine had rock bands, and I used to help set up equipment for them. And one of the hot local bands at that time was a group from the Houston suburbs called ZZ Top.
No kidding.
So I had known ZZ Top when I was a teenager, right before they broke out as a national act. And then, and since I was a Southern Baptist preacher's kid and wasn't allowed to dance, that meant I was one of the only people at the dances that was paying any attention to the bands. And so, to make a long story short, I had interviewed ZZ Top again in the early 80s for my column in Champaign-Urbana, and a couple of years after that, I was in Denver covering the religion beat. So I'm sitting there waiting to do a jump interview with the newly appointed Archbishop of Denver, trying to get the very first interview with him, which is a big deal, as you can imagine. And I'm sitting there by the elevators, and I hear this deep Southern fried voice behind me that says, "Port Arthur Teen Club, right?" And I turn around, and it's Billy Gibbons, the lead guitar player and singer for the band ZZ Top, who recognized me because I had interviewed him for my rock column just about 4 to 5 years earlier. And he's standing there in a red silk ZZ Top tour jacket and sunglasses and baseball cap, you know, with his beard down all the way over his chest, if any of your listeners happen to be fans of classic MTV. So we're standing there talking for a second when, sure enough, the doors of the elevator open, and out walks the Archbishop of Denver, also wearing silk, but quite differently attired. And as I put it in the foreword, these men are priests in radically different churches.
I gotta ask, does your connection with ZZ Top explain the beard, Terry?
No. It doesn't. That's a whole other story. But
okay.
We don't have time for that one.
All right. Well, back to the Passion of the Christ. How do you evaluate
that?
You're
not going to let me finish the story.
Oh, finish the story. I'm sorry.
I introduce Billy Gibbons to the Archbishop of Denver. You kind of have to imagine that scene at that point. And what made me think of this particular ZZ Top song is that Archbishop Stafford was coming to Denver from Memphis. Jesus just left Chicago, and he's bound for New Orleans, working for one end of the other and all points in between. What's halfway in between is Memphis. And as I said, there are probably more blues guitar players in Memphis than there are Catholics, but that may even be an entry in the census data, you know, for the city of Memphis. So anyway, after introducing them, Billy Gibbons says to me, "You mean you went from interviewing people like me to interviewing people like him?" And in a way, that's what the book is all about. I did. I really did go from being a professional entertainment writer to one who now covers, you know, the world of mainstream religion. But I've never lost my interest in either of those subjects. And there's all kinds of people that I wish, from the world of religion, that I could get to talk to people in the world of pop culture. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes a lot of sense.
Now, that brings us to Mel Gibson, in the sense that Gibson, whatever one believes of his very traditional or old-fashioned brand of Catholicism, Gibson does seem to have done some talking to people in the religious world, at least vis-a-vis this one movie project, The Passion. He also, by the way, is very articulately and publicly pro-life, which is a stand that has gotten him into a lot of trouble.
Very briefly, did he pull off a first by getting that movie made?
What do you mean?
Well, just a straight and very traditional reading of The Passion of the Christ, and just The Passion of the Christ. Not a lot of, dance numbers and not even in English.
Well, yeah, he focused in infinitely tighter. But what I really thought was radical about that movie, and this is very interesting, if you go back and look at the strong Protestant support for that, that movie is incredibly and astonishingly and very specifically Catholic, which I thought was fascinating that so many Protestants, you know, were moving heaven and earth to support that movie when it was so explicitly based on the Stations of the Cross, you know, and a host of other big pieces of Catholic tradition.
What movie, in your mind, Terry, of the last 20 years or more, best represents what you have called this intensely spiritual aspect of pop American culture?
If I was going to pick one movie that best captured the watered-down spirituality of American pop culture, I would say the entire Star Wars trilogy. If I was going to look at one that I think most radically captured a religious vision that is not Christian, I would say The Matrix.
And what is the vision of The Matrix, briefly?
Gnosticism. Very explicitly and articulately Gnostic. And I think that the two siblings who wrote it knew that. I think there's enough stuff in it to make us think that they actually knew what they were doing.
Folks, we're coming to you live on this Sunday night. It's March the 19th. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. You can also send us your email at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's talk with Mike in Akron, Ohio. He starts us off tonight. Mike, welcome.
Thank you. Do you think Christians should listen to heavy metal rock and roll music? I just wanted to get your opinion on it.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike, and thanks for listening out there in Akron. Terry?
Sure. Why not? I mean, in terms of the actual sound, the beats, the guitarist, whatever, what he should be asking is about the worldview and the content of the musicians who are making the music. In other words, I don't think that there are forms of music or settings on amplifiers or colors of guitars that are more sinful or fallen than others. Now, you got a whole other issue of should you be listening to heavy metal music in church on Sunday morning. Now, that would be a different issue.
And why so?
I think worship is different from other activities in life.
Now, that's a big point. That's a huge point. When we come back, that's the blur that I think has come up with Christians as they engage the pop culture. They've said, look, we need to engage the pop culture. Let's do it on Sunday morning. So let's invite the pop culture in to Sunday morning, to the Lord's Day. And that has really edged a lot of other things out of Sunday morning that used to be considered by Christians absolutely necessary. When we come back, is that the way this road should be running? We'll take more of your phone calls and your email after the break. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. Or our email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Call now, 1-800-730-2727. Terry Mattingly is author of the new book, Pop Goes Religion, Faith in Popular Culture. Stay tuned. Dr. Dean Winthy, president of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the important work of Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief.
It has done a remarkable job of joining acts of mercy to the center of Christian theology, namely Christ and his saving work for us. There in the past has been a tendency to do one or the other, that is, on the one hand, to proclaim the gospel and neglect the very real human needs, or the opposite extreme has been to tend to human needs but not to bring the saving gospel of Christ to bear. And Pastor Harrison and his staff share with us the conviction that these two go hand in hand.
Find LCMS World Relief at our website, issuesetc.org, or call 1-888-930-4438.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
If you enjoy listening to Issues Etc. on the weekends, did you know that you can listen to 12 new hours of Issues Etc. each week on the Internet? All you have to do is go to our website, issuesetc.org, click the worldwide KFUO logo, and there you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7, including 12 new programs weekly. The website address again, issuesetc.org.
Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. However, we are not funded by the church body. We're also not affiliated with Lutheran Hour Ministries or the Lutheran Layman's League. Issues Etc. is supported by listeners like you. Please help support this worldwide outreach by making a gift this week. Our address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Thanks for your prayerful consideration. The Apostle James lays out a real simple scenario. He says, look, if you find your brother who is ill-clad and ill-fed, and you simply say to him, God bless you, brother, be warm and be fed now, get out of my way, James says, what good is that? There is a concern that is pressed upon us in Scripture for both body and soul. That's what LCMS World Relief is all about. They underwrite Issues Etc. You can find out more about their efforts to be concerned with both body and soul at our website, issuesetc.org. You can also call them toll-free and donate 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438, a relief agency that is concerned about both body and soul, LCMS World Relief, 1-888-930-4438. We're talking about religion and pop culture. Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's author of the nationally syndicated On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities and author of the new book, Pop Goes Religion, Faith and Popular Culture. Terry, before we go to our calls here, you mentioned something right before the break, the difference between worship and what's going on in the culture. More than just kind of an inside-outside scenario that many Christians think, well, this is what happens inside church as opposed to what happens outside church. I remember my seminary days, one of my professors saying, look, we're talking about the difference between culture and cultus. That is the two different realms of what's going on in the Christian's life. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, you, of course, have different approaches to worship and different ways of determining what is and what is not proper worship in different branches of Christianity, and you can't forget that. I mentioned earlier that I was raised Southern Baptist, but I'm a convert to Eastern Orthodoxy, and you don't get too much further apart than the tradition, the traditions of Eastern Orthodoxy and what you could almost call the anti-traditions of Southern Baptist life, in the sense that the Southern Baptists are very, very free church, and individual congregations determine what is proper and what is not in their worship. So they literally can do whatever a majority rule vote establishes as worship, correct?
I think so.
So, I mean, I don't want to judge for them what is or isn't worship. And that's the problem now, is you've got a lot of people voting on what creates worship, so you can just simply say, well, we want to have pop music that changes, you know, every 3 to 4 weeks, and for us in the free church Protestant tradition, that is what we vote is the music that most helps us express ourselves in worship. And how do you argue with that?
Terry, you're a journalist by trade. How do you think the, in particular, print journalism, do you think it gets Christianity?
Well, of course, that's the whole website, getreligion.org, is about religion coverage in general. And since the three people who write for the blog are Christians, we focus a lot of our attention on that. I've spent 25-plus years studying issues of media bias and claims of media bias, and I think there are people who who do an absolutely fabulous job covering religion. Some of them are believers and some of them are not, but there's no question that the mainstream press struggles to cover religion, and a lot of studies have shown that, a lot of secular and a lot of groups have established that this is one of the biggest problem areas for mainstream journalism. Let's just leave it at that.
Well, you've written, I think, recently about asking the question, are there any stories nowadays that do not have a religious element to them?
Yeah, that question was actually asked by Dr. Martin Marty, the Lutheran Church historian at the University of Chicago. He and I spoke at a meeting that he did as well at the University of Nebraska a couple of years ago. And this was post 9/11, but not that long after 9/11. And he said, you know, for years and years, we've all asked the question, what is religion news? And he basically said, I think we're way past that now. We're even past the area of being able to talk about the need for one religion reporter or two religion reporters on the staffs of newspapers, something that he, by the way, would be very in favor of. But he simply said, we're now to the point where we have to argue what isn't religion news. Try to name a very, very important story in world affairs right now that you could honestly, with a straight face, say there's no religious implications to this at all. I wrote a column about that just a couple of weeks ago that's up at my website, tmat.net, if someone wanted to take a look at that.
You made the point early on, Terry, that American pop culture is not secular. Make your case.
Well, it's interested in the big subjects of our lives. It also has found that basically kind of atheistic nihilism just doesn't work, I mean, unless your name is Woody Allen. And even in Woody Allen, you're dealing with a lot of things that he's even in some of his best work, he's still asking very, very spiritual questions. So even Woody Allen finds that to reach ordinary or even Manhattan viewers, you have to be willing to ask the big questions of life, and the big questions of life are inherently religious.
Is that good news or bad news for Christians in pop culture that it is intense, as you have said, intensely spiritual pop culture is?
I think it actually makes apologetics a lot harder, in the sense that I think the average, you know, seminary-educated pastor is trained at the seminary level as if they were going to be going out and debating atheists or debating other members of major world religions who explicitly believe in those world religions. They don't quite know what to do with this stuff that looks partially Christian, sounds partially Christian, and the people who hold the beliefs believe that they are Christians. And you're, in effect, trying to talk them out of the fact that they believe they're a Christian. That's a tough apologetic stance.
With only 30 seconds here, when I asked you at the very beginning, who is the Jesus of American pop culture, your first answer, your first quick answer, was Oprah. What did you mean by that? 30 seconds here.
Well, I think she just best summarizes the kind of watered-down, all-tolerant version of Christianity that is held by a lot of people in the middle of the American spectrum. She's every woman in that sense.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. Folks, here's our mailing address. It's Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Here's our resource line number, 1-800-737-0172. Now, you can use either of those, the address or the number, to receive a free complimentary copy of our next Issues Etc. journal, or to help support Issues Etc., Talk Radio for the Thinking Christian, by making a tax-deductible gift, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117, or you can call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. 0172. Well, this is our position. I've said it many times on the air that Christians are not, we do not have the luxury of living in a world of our own choosing or in a culture of our own choosing. Sometimes when you talk to Christians and they discuss the culture, you get the impression that they would like to, well, they'd like to be able to live in a different one than they have. Well, this is the one we're stuck with, such as it is. 21st century America. Immersed in consumerism, immersed in all of the quote-unquote evils of American culture that Christians so readily recognize, what we fail to see so often is how those very ideas, those presuppositions, have found their way into the church and into our individual Christian lives. Did they worm their way in because they are an irresistible force? No. Very often, especially in our churches, they've been invited in, these forces of American pop culture. And the church has been changed thereby, and not for the better. Jesus says of his disciples that they are in the world, but not of the world. And even he will not pray that God takes them out of the world, but that he would keep them from the evil one. What treasure do we have that no marketing guru has? What message do we have that no other institution in culture possesses? We have the cross of Jesus Christ. It's what makes Christians altogether different. It's what makes us in the world but not of the world, rather than being simply of the world. Our crucified and risen Savior, who for the time being keeps us in the world, the salt and light for this dying culture, with a message of his death and resurrection for all sinners. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Listen each week to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of Worldwide KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.